Test, test into GarageBand. That's looking good. Test, test into Ustream. All right. Let's do this thing. Welcome to No Illusions for Monday, the 23rd of August, 2010. My name's Cameron Riley. First time I've done this live show for a long time. I can't even remember. I think we did one in January about the no clean feed stuff. But anyway... what I wanted to chat to you tonight, the reason why I wanted to do this show is we had an election. Yay for us. Go Australia. And, oh, look, for some reason there's an American penny on my lap. I don't know where it came from, but there's an American penny. And I just want to talk about the election and have a few of you come on and we'll have a chat. For those of you that are listening to the podcast, we're recording this live on Ustream and on Skype. And anyone who wants to come in and chat is more than welcome to do. Hey, Monty. G'day, mate. Good to see you. Well, see you on the in the chat window, along with Tony and Tony. Tony and Tony too. So we had an election. What do you all think of the election? I was pretty happy with it. And I thought I'd tell you why. I mean, it was the first election we've had in a while. Obviously, in about 70 years, where neither of the major parties or the major party in a coalition of other major parties is obviously able to form government. And to me, that's a good thing. Obviously, it has challenges from a governance perspective for the country, but it's a good thing because I'm not a big fan of the major parties. And for years, I've had this discussion with people that if you want to see change, particularly with the two-party system as we have basically in this country, two major parties, we need to start voting for independents and or minor parties and give them enough wherewithal that they can actually have an impact on the policies of the major parties. Now, we've had obviously significant third parties in the past, the Australian Democrats. One Nation nearly got there, I guess. They got, I think, 9 or 10% of the vote back when they first ran. But the Greens is the first legitimate third party we've had in quite some time. Obviously, the Democrats haven't been a political force probably since the whole, you know, Cheryl Kerno debacle when she bailed on them and went to Labor. What was his name? Gareth Evans. Oh, my God. That was a crime in itself. She should have gone to jail just for having sex with Gareth Evans. What an appalling man. Mm. Very smart, though, I think he was. Just weedy. So I guess I shouldn't criticize him. But, yes, Andrew Wilkie, as Kodo points out in the chat room, very pleased. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet, though. I believe that it's one of these hairline results down in Tasmania. But... it looks like Andrew Wilkie may get in. He's tipped to get in. Now, I've been a fan of Andrew Wilkie's for ever since those dark days before the invasion of Iraq when he was working for the Office of National Assessments owner in Canberra and came out and said that there was no evidence to support the theory. It's not a beard, Monty. It's a, well, there's a soul patch there. See? And this thing... I mean, I don't know what that is. It's just, it gives me something to tug on when I'm thinking. well, something else to tug on while I'm thinking, I should say. Anyway, don't distract me, Monty. Wilkie, you know, he came out and said there was no evidence for the position that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Wilkie... I can't exactly remember what he did at ONA, but he had some position where he had access to intelligence on Iraq and said that it was well known that we didn't have evidence. And he got absolutely vilified by the Howard government and also, I think, by the opposition and by the media. Absolutely vilified, character assassinated right across the board. And nobody really stood up for him. So he resigned from his job at ONA, got completely vilified, all, by the way, under parliamentary privilege, so he couldn't sue for defamation, libel, whichever one of those two he would have sued for. And he went on and wrote a book, Axis of Deceit, I think it was called, a couple of years later, which I read, which is a good book. And he's had a couple of cracks at politics. I think he was originally a member of Young Liberals, I think, back in the day. And then he ran for the Greens. And this time he's just run as an independent. And as I said earlier, it looks like he's got himself a seat as one of the five independents, along with Adam Bandt, the Green down in Melbourne, who got a seat in the lower house. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. Now, so we've got our first Indigenous MP, which I'm very pleased with. I don't know if any of you guys heard the show that I did with young Ewan Saunders from Socialist Alliance just a couple of weeks before the election. But during that, we were talking about more political representation of Indigenous Australians. And I asked him what the Socialist Alliance, by the way, I voted for the Socialist Alliance. I did in the Senate, I think. What's the white one? Is that the white one's the Senate, I think? I voted Greens in the lower house. If I can't remember which one's green and which one's white, the forms. Anyway, Socialist Alliance, I voted for the whites. And I think they got like 0.9% of the vote last time I checked in this district. But anyway, I talked to him about the Indigenous representation, and he had an interesting position on it, which kind of bemused me a little bit. He said that they didn't believe that enforced representation, quotas, was going to do the trick, was going to do them any good. You know, I was arguing that I would like to see, let's say, 10% of the seats in the lower house or the upper house, doesn't really matter at this stage, allocated for Indigenous candidates. And I don't know how you make that work. I would just like to see some enforced representation of Indigenous Australians in this country so they get to participate at a higher level with the decisions that affect them. He said he didn't think that was a solution because, you know, we've had Indigenous Australians in the Senate before, and he felt that the policies that they put forward weren't necessarily in the best interests of all Aboriginals and certainly weren't accepted by or appreciated or agreed to by other Aboriginals. But I thought it has to be a good step. I mean, more representation for Aboriginals or for women or for gays or for atheists, whichever minority you want, more representation in the political spectrum can't be a bad thing. I mean, it may not be the total solution, but it has to be a good thing. Anyway, so in 2010, after 230-odd years of since the white invasion, the Christian invasion of Australia, the Christian genocide, invasion and genocide, we finally have a black member of parliament, which I toast Australia. Cheers to you, Australia. You're catching up. We're catching up with something. America has a black president. We just got our first black MP. We got our first Greens MP, obviously, as I said before, which is a big thing as well. But the other big thing, of course, is nine Greens in the Senate. So either way you dice it, it's going to be very difficult for whichever government ends up, whichever party ends up forming government, to get a lot of legislation through over the next, well, between now and when we have the next election, whenever that may be, because we've got not only these five independents, and look, three of them are Nationals. Chances are, if I was a betting man, and I am, that they're going to throw their hat in with the coalition once they get the NBN stuff sorted out. But it's still going to be very hard. They have to elect a speaker and a president, a whip, no, a speaker, and Mr. and President. And then they're going to find it very hard to get bills through the lower house, let alone the upper house, where we've got nine Greens. And, you know, I guess... I think it's a good thing. I mean, it's going to cause some instability. It's going to cause concern. The dollar's going to be weak maybe for a little while. But, you know, it doesn't matter. We you know, I've been having lots of discussions with friends over the last few weeks about this. And, you know, I have lots of friends that are liberal voters, you know, business people, very pro-liberal, some of them on the show tonight. And, you know, they think, rightly or wrongly, that the coalition will do a better job handling our economy, handling the budget, getting us back out of a deficit, you know, making sure the business is healthy, therefore there's high employment. And I mean, I can't really disagree with that. I mean, I think by and large, the Liberals tend to do, the Conservative parties tend to do a pretty good job of building a strong economy. And that's a good thing in some ways, but it's not the only thing. You know, we need to think bigger. We have a, the way I feel anyway, is we have a responsibility over and beyond how healthy our economy is. That's definitely one healthy thing, but it's like a business. You know, we are past the point, hopefully, where we judge a business, a corporation, or even a small business purely on its revenues or purely on its profit. We look at the triple bottom line. You know, we look at how well they treat their employees, what a good corporate citizen they are. There are you know, a variety of metrics over and beyond money that we look at. And we look at that as individuals as well. I mean, you can be the richest guy on the block, but if you're a complete asshole and, you know, your kids don't talk to you and you're on your fourth divorce and your friends hate your guts, you know, who's that Scrooge, you know, Dick and Scrooge? That's not somebody who most people would consider a successful human being. And it's the same with who we are as a country. We need to think beyond, you know, purely economic issues. And the sad truth is, under the Howard government, we were not a good we were not a country that cared enough, I think, for the people in our country that struggle to make it work in our wonderful country, in our wonderful social democratic system. Nor were we good global citizens, the way that we participated in invasions of third world countries and the way that we, you know, completely ignored the damage that is being done as a result of climate change on the ecosystem, and particularly countries that are already hard hit. We're looking at the floods in Pakistan over the last week. We're looking at the people in Africa and how a 2-degree temperature rise is going to have devastating effects on their country. So we haven't been good citizens. And I obviously, I guess the big story, and I'll get to some of the comments in the forum there in a minute, guys. The big story for me, apart from the stuff that I've already mentioned, is how much Kevin Rudd fucked it up. I mean, I was never a fan of Rudd. I'm not a fan of the Labor Party at all. And, you know, I didn't vote for them in 2007. I was very skeptical. I told everybody I knew at the time, and I'm sure I said it on this show over and over again, they're just another big party that are in line with big corporations to greater or lesser degrees than the Liberals. Might be different corporations or different interests, but at the end of the day, they were just going to toe the line of big corporate in Australia. And, you know, that's pretty much what ended up happening. Rudd backed down on climate change. He hasn't really done much about ending our participation in the invasions of Western armies into the Middle East, or standing up for justice in the United Nations. And then when his own party decided that he was a liability and got rid of him, and Gillard came in, the first thing she did was pull back from his attempts to tax the mining industry. So the Labor Party failed. I mean, but you know, I'm sure we all remember how much support Rudd had. I mean, what a golden child he was when he threw Howard out in 2007 in the minds of at least 50% or 52.7% of the population. And, you know, all of that goodwill squandered so completely in 3 years that it's quite astounding, and just goes to show that even with that much support, if you don't listen to the electorate, And if you don't deliver on your promises, you can be punished. Even in a country like this, where we're fairly blasé about politics and fairly unengaged, and where we have a history of giving, you know, most governments at least two terms to sort stuff out. So a massive fall from grace, and deserve it. You know, I would love to know if he even has the lack of cognitive dissonance to realize how much of this is his fault, or if he's still just blaming everyone else for his own demise. Tony Kynaston says that the Nats are a third political party that wasn't mentioned. Well, you know, I guess so. They're really, I think of them as just part of the coalition now. They've been a coalition for so long, they're really just one party in my eyes. I know they could always split. And the LNP is one that I was having a debate with Martin Walsh, I think, on Twitter on Saturday night about how this was the lowest vote for the major parties, the two or the three, I guess, if you include the coalition, in decades. And he was coming up with this figure that they got 81% of the vote. I could only count 73. And then I realised I'd left out the LNP. I'd sort of forgotten that the LNP was actually a party now. And so I think it was 73%. If you add in the 9% or whatever that the LNP got, they got up to 81, the two major, well, the Labour, ALP and the coalition. But yeah, they're I guess, a major party. They get, sort of 8-9% of the vote, I think, the Nats. But, you know, I just think of them in the coalition as all in bed together for the time being. Better, Tony's again saying fiscal conservative, social liberal, better than liberal conservative, social conservative. Yeah, I guess so. But I'm not sure that, I'm not sure who you're referring to when you say that. I think that the Labour Party is pretty fiscally conservative these days. I mean, everyone refers to them as centre-left. I actually think of them as probably right-left. From what I have read, Bill Shorten and these guys who supposedly were the power brokers that engineered Gillard's takeover are part of the New South Wales Labour right faction. So this depiction of Rudd as being, you know, hard left or even centre left, I think is pretty strange considering who brought her to power and how much, how quickly she bowed down to the big mining interests. They certainly seem to be fiscally conservative to me. Now, of course, we were in a budget surplus after the Howard government was removed, and now we've got this fairly massive deficit. But of course, the GFC kicked in. Now, I think there was like 50 Australian economists all signed an open letter last week, I think including my mate Nicholas Gruen down in Melbourne. And they said that they thought the stimulus package that the Rudd government put together quickly, obviously, and under difficult conditions, but they think that stimulus package saved our economy. Now, in hindsight, we can all say perhaps that they could have done a better job. They could have not done the pink bats. There are lots of things in hindsight that probably deserved more oversight. But according to these 50 economists, whether or not you believe economists is up to you, but they seem to think that this stimulus package did a good job of saving the economy. Now, we also have to remember that the economic conditions under which the GFC was allowed to build up and occur happened on this extreme conservative watch. Didn't happen under the Rudd government or the Obama government's watch. It happened under Bush, Blair, and Howard. And we can play blame game. You know, Clinton allowed policies through that enabled the lack of regulation and oversight on some of the extreme ends of the financial derivatives markets. And obviously Australia was not in as bad a position. Our banks, because we don't have a lot of competition in this country, managed to survive a bit better than a lot of the international banks. But also the stimulus package that was passed. Anyway, look, the bottom line is I think that the federal ALP under Rudd was relatively fiscally conservative. We could also argue about the NBN, whether or not we need to build that, but I think everyone listening to this show probably thinks the NBN is a good idea. Anyway, what else you got in the chat room here? Queensland, huge swing against Labor in Queensland. Yeah, I've read that. There seems to be a fair amount of antagonism towards the Bligh Labor government up here, and I don't really follow it that much, to be honest. Obviously, I've only been in Queensland for 2 years, but the ALP has been in power here for how long? 10 years, 12 years, Beattie and then Bligh. I don't even know how long it's been. It's been a bloody long time. And, you know, I think after that amount of time, you're always going to see a huge amount of antagonism towards any party that's been in power for that long, which brings me to this thing of, term limits. Arch Bevis, who's the minister here in Brisbane, or was, might still be, there's some doubt again about that vote, but he's been the minister for Brisbane for something like 17 years. Why don't we have term limits in this country? I don't understand that. It just seems wrong to have one person in power for that long, you know, 2 decades near enough. Have a drinky. Anyway, I was quite happy with the election outcome. I think it's a good step for Australia to have the Greens play a bigger role, not only in environmental policy, obviously, but also in social justice issues, because I just don't see it coming out of either of the major parties or the major party in the coalition. And we are a very lucky country. We are one of the luckiest countries in the world. I mean, if you're white, not so lucky if you're part of the indigenous population, but for that 97% of us that are white, or whatever the figure is, we're very, very, very lucky. We're very well off. We have a very, very high standard of living by international standards. We are extremely wealthy by any metric, as I've said on this show a million times. And as such, I think we have a responsibility to be the most, or one of the most progressive countries in the world. We need to take a position of leadership on issues like what we do about climate change, which is one of the things that really disappointed me about Rudd. You know, this whole attitude of, well, we're not going to be first movers. We're going to wait to see what everyone else does and then we'll do it. You know, that's just piss weak for my money. We should be leaders of the world, particularly on issues like this, where we actually are one of the biggest carbon emitters per population in the world. It's a toss-up between us and the United States. Some figures I see say it's us. Some figures say it's the USA. Let's say we're either the worst or the second worst carbon emitters on the planet per capita. We also, you know, dig a shitload of stuff out of the ground, which contributes to climate change. We have a responsibility. Oh, by the way, we also have, you know, this amazing opportunity to be one of the leaders in the world for renewable sources of energy. We have all of this land where we're doing nothing with it that's just soaking in sunlight. We have all these hot rocks. We have this massive coastline where we can tap into wave energy. We have wind energy that we could be tapping into. We also have uranium if we wanted to really invest in the next generation of nuclear energy. So I think that I would like to see Australia be leaders in the world of this kind of stuff. I'd also like to see us be leaders in the world in terms of social justice issues. We do get to, you know, look, we're a piss ant in terms of global population, et cetera, but, you know, we're English, we're well-liked, we're well-respected, generally speaking, all around the world. We have an opportunity to bat above our weight in the United Nations, in global forums, because, you know, people listen to us. They take us seriously. We get a lot of respect these days, a lot more than we did in the 70s, I think. And I think it's important that we're seen to be leading the world both at home and also in our attitudes towards our brothers and sisters around the planet in terms of social justice issues, speaking out against social injustice. As Monty says, gay marriage, you know, obviously, it's just appalling that we still have, you know, legislation banning same-sex marriage in this country. It's an absolute disgrace, as is our treatment of our Indigenous population, just to name two things. Of course, I'd also like to see Julia Gillard remain Prime Minister because she's an atheist. And, you know, I have genuine concerns about the rise of Christian dominionism in this country. And I'll explain what that is again for those of you who haven't heard that term before. There is a branch of evangelical thought in Christian communities that came out of the US in the 70s that believes that the Lord wants them to have dominion over the earth. And by dominion, they basically think they should be running things politically, in the education system, economically, militarily. They believe that it is their duty to be running everything and running it according to the Bible and according to what they believe are Christian principles. Now, you know, we've seen what's happened with the United States over the last 30 years, sort of post-Reagan with the rise of the Christian right, and it's very scary. I think even most Christians in Australia looking at that would think it's a little bit scary. And yet in Australia, we've seen an increasing trend towards dominionists, the religious right, the Christian right in this country. You know, Abbott obviously is known as being a staunch Catholic, said just a few days before the election that he believes that the Bible should be read in schools by all school children, public schools, should be mandatory. You know, in the Liberal Party, we obviously have Hockey, who's out as a Christian. In the Labor Party, we had Rudd, who was very outspoken as a Christian and participated in the Australian Christian Lobby conferences. Stephen Conroy. Oh, the other good news in the election, of course, Stephen Fielding lost his seat in the Senate. We don't get rid of him that quickly, obviously. He gets to serve out his term, but that's a good thing. I know that Family First did win a seat down in South Australia as well, which is unfortunate, but getting rid of Steve Fielding is something that made me very happy. Also, getting rid of Wilson Tuckey. What a fucking dipshit. I can't believe that he held on for as long as he did. Anyway, and hopefully these independents are going to get rid of Barnaby Joyce, or at least slap Barnaby Joyce down, which would be a good thing as well. But anyway, so, you know, having an atheist as the head of government for me is a very good step in the right direction. And I had this discussion with some good friends of mine just before the election. And, you know, they were saying, well, somebody's religious beliefs shouldn't come into it. And I was like, well, look, you know, my policy is I respect people's right to believe whatever they want. But when people who believe in fairy tales are making decisions on a daily basis to run the country, are making decisions on legislation, on health policy, on education policy, on military policy, defense, it scares the hell out of me. I mean, anyone who believes, who genuinely believes in any form of religion, in my book, has a screw loose. They might be nice people, they might be kind and generous people, they might be good members of the community, and I know quite a few like that. I have friends that obviously are Catholic priests and Christian evangelicals and whatnot. But deep down, I genuinely believe there's something wrong with them. Their brains don't work properly. Even though they're in the majority, you know, this believing in crazy, crazy, crazy stories that not only aren't supported by evidence, but are completely refuted by the evidence. And yet they still cling to these primitive Bronze Age belief systems and make decisions based on them, which is the concerning thing. There's something wrong with them. And, you know, if we can have more atheists running the country, I feel a lot more secure. I will take the intelligence and the intellectual prowess of an atheist any day over somebody who is a genuine believer in any form of religion. Monty says the Church of Lotu should run for the Senate in Victoria. All you need is 2.5% and you get a seat. Well, seriously, Monty, I don't see the Church of Lotu doing that anytime soon, but I do see the Cigar Rights Party of Australia running for a seat somewhere in the next federal election. I am trying to work on my business partner, Jason Nelson, to set up a political party called the Cigar Rights Party, where we're going to argue for the rights of cigar smokers, and all we want is to be able to smoke cigars in a dedicated zone, a cigar club that's branded a cigar club. Everyone knows it's a cigar club. You don't go there if you don't want to smoke cigars. So we believe that if you can go to a brothel to have sex with a hooker, and if you can go to like a needle room to shoot up heroin safely, you should be able to go to a cigar club to smoke a fucking cigar. It's ridiculous that we are lower down on the rung than people who want to prostitute or want to inject heroin. And as you know, Jason often says, there are two public places where you can legally smoke tobacco in this country. Do you know what those two places are? One is the federal penitentiary, and the second is the high roller rooms at casinos. They are the two places where you're allowed to smoke in a public place. So apparently, if we want to have a cigar in public, we either need to commit a crime and get thrown in the big house, or we need to be rich and be able to drop a lot of money at Jamie Packer's house. So anyway, I'm interested in politics, obviously, but I don't really see myself as the kind of guy who's going to run for politics. You know, I made a decision 5 or 6 years ago that in order to have any genuine long-term political influence in a country like Australia, you need to have a media company. You need to be able to reach the people. You need to be able to talk to the people. You need to be able to bypass the sort of traditional mainstream or government-owned media to do that. And that to change the way people think is the best form of political influence. To do shows like this with all of the five people that are watching. Talk to people and get people debating, thinking, asking questions, challenging beliefs, thinking about the sort of country that we want to have, that we want to live in. Gets back to my whole thing about having an ethics ministry, a minister of ethics in Australia. What are the ethics? What are the principles that we want to live up to as a people, as a nation? What's important to us as a country? What is more important? Is it making money or social justice? You know, where do these things sit in our hierarchy of values, of principles? I'd like to see a lot more dialogue about these sorts of things in Australia, and I don't think it's going to happen through the corporate media, so we need to run our own. For those of you who don't know too, TPN's obviously gone through a couple of really tough years as I ran out of money and the advertising died when the GFC started to kick in a couple of years ago. And TPN's been pretty quiet and whittled back, and we've had some great financial support from friends like Tony Kynaston and Tony Kodo and Bill Liao and those sorts of guys. But what I did recently is I've rolled TPN into my new business, the Suave Lifestyle Group, that Jason and I run. Jason's the majority owner. I'm a minor owner in the business. And, we've got a bunch of traditional businesses, the cigar business. We've got a construction business doing lifestyle products like decks and pergolas and gazebos and those sorts of things. We're importing a bunch of different luxury lifestyle products. And I've rolled TPN into that as the media arm. And the Suave Group, suave.com.au, is funding TPN. So it's funding the servers, it's funding our IT team, it's funding my salary, obviously, which is a big part of it. So, TPN has financial backing, like stable, long-term financial backing for the first time in 3 or 4 years, which is exciting for me. It means that, you know, Jason and I both want to build it back up to its former glory and much beyond that. And, you know, we can do it in a way where we don't have to rely on donations. We don't have to rely on advertising. We're going to seek advertising, but we don't have to rely on it. You know, we've got a funding stream that's long-term, that's sustainable, and where the success of TPN is part of the success of the business group, because we want to have a media arm there. And, you know, we can also advertise our own products and services into TPN, obviously. But, you know, we want to reach a lot of people and build a legitimate, you know, long-term global media business. So very exciting for me. I want to thank all you guys and girls for your support over the last few years. It's meant a lot to me. And the fact that, you know, some of you even turned up tonight for the show. Chrissy, by the way, wanted to be on the show. She couldn't. She has orchestra rehearsal tonight. She's playing in the Brisbane Symphony. They're doing Wagner in a couple of weeks. The Ring series, I don't know which one. Rite of the Valkyries is in there, I think, which I'll be excited about, being an Apocalypse Now fan. But any of you in Brisbane, come along and hear Chrissy play violin in the Brisbane Symphony. But yeah, she'll be on future shows, and that'll be good. We like talking politics and religion and all those sorts of things, preferably over a cigar and a beer. So anyway, guys, I think that's it. That's a half hour. I thought I'd get in a quick half hour, just talk about my thoughts on the election. Thanks for jumping on. Any questions, anything anyone wants to discuss before I cut it off? Tony or Paul or any of the stalkers that are listening but not talking? That's it. All right, folks. Have a good one. We'll be back, I don't know, probably next Monday night, maybe even before then. Keep an eye on my Twitter feed. Cheers.